All right, are we assembled? Which parties? So Lisa, let me begin by reading the opening statement. This is the time and place for hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of a cease and desist order in the matter of the City of Ferndale Wastewater Treatment Facility. This item has been properly noticed. Sheets explaining the procedures for these hearings are available and updatable. Will all those expect to give testimony in this matter please stand? Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
All right, we'll begin with staff's presentation.
Good morning. My name is Lisa Bernard. I'm staff of the Region and Water Board in the permitting unit. And today I'm going to talk to you about the third extension and revision of a cease and desist order for the City of Ferndale. POTW. The proposed revisions would extend compliance deadlines, allowing for the city to complete environmental studies as well as the new treatment plant design and construct a new treatment plant which is capable of greatly improving effluent quality before discharging into Francis Creek and the Salt River. A summary of Ferndale's history has been included in your agenda package, as well as the proposed order, a copy of public comments received during the public notice period, and staff response to those comments. And at this time, I'd like to enter the file into the hearing record. Okay. So the City of Ferndale is located west of Highway 101 in Humboldt County, about 20 minutes south of Eureka. And So we have the City of Ferndale right here, and we have Highway, I think it's 217 that comes in, 211 that comes in off of Highway 101 there. This is the treatment plant, which is at the north end of town, and although it doesn't really look like it in this photo, everything sort of slopes to the north, and this is the Eel River just above its mouth at the Pacific Ocean. Sewage treatment plant discharges into, here's Francis Creek, that kind of bends around the treatment plant, and this is the Salt River. And the treatment plant discharges right here, just above their confluence. So there's approximately 13 miles of collection system that deliver municipal waste to this treatment works, which currently consists of primary and secondary treatment ponds. So here's your, Ray taught me how to use this, but I'm not used to it yet. So here's our treatment pond, primary treatment pond, and this is a settling pond. They have a chlorine contact chamber here, and the discharge point's about right there. Anyways, the basin plan prohibits discharges to the Eel River and its tributaries during the period between May 15th and September 30th each year. But during the winter months, the city is permitted to discharge at 1% into the receiving water. They have not been able to do this for quite some time, which is why we've been having cease and desist orders. So we have some issues with the Salt River watershed. Historically, the Salt River was wide and deep enough to be used as a shipping channel. But the Salt River over time has experienced a lot of reduction in its capacity from sediment deposition and prolific growth of nuisance vegetation. And as a result, there's been a lot of flooding of nearby properties, and discharges from the POTW just exacerbate those problems. So just to give you an idea of kind of what's going on, here is Francis Creek immediately above the discharge point. I took this photo myself in January of 2005. And you can see here that there's a lot of sediment deposition that's been occurring. That treatment pond that we were looking at in the previous photo is just off to the side here, maybe 30 feet. And all of this material here has actually been dredged out of that channel in the prior season. So there's about 4 feet of sediment that continues to be deposited into this channel every year. Now, here's the same, it's a little bit different angle, but exactly the same position of Francis Creek from April of 2008. And you can see that all of that sediment that had been here is, I don't know, maybe they took it and spread it over the field, but even further deposition of sediment has occurred, and they have all of this in-stream nuisance vegetation, and the channel is only a trickle now. And of course, this sediment deposition has nothing to do with the city's discharge, but it is affecting their ability to discharge at 1% into the receiving water. And the Salt River is having exactly the same problem. So a little bit on the history of Ferndale's enforcement. They've been working on this problem, recognizing that they're losing their 1% ability to discharge at 1% since about 1999, but we issued the first cease and desist order in 2003. The city came up with a preferred project under that cease and desist order that was a sequencing batch reactor, which is a type of activated sludge process, and they moved forward under that. But they only had 2 years to comply with that cease and desist order, and it just wasn't enough time. So they came back in front of the board and asked for more time. I guess the thing about the upgrade of the treatment plant is that they're hoping for better treatment and a higher quality of effluent so that they can then discharge with an exception to our basin plan, which will need to be adopted by the board in order to allow them to do that. And we'll have to update their new NBDS permit in order to get that done. So in 2005, the board adopted a new cease and desist order giving further tasks for the city to complete, and also we asked them to implement a mitigation for the dissolved oxygen. They were having a lot of depression of the dissolved oxygen in the receiving water as a result of BOD and low oxygen being discharged into the receiving water. So they implemented that project, and under that cease and desist order, they had come up with a new project because the citizens didn't like the SBR project, and so the city council put in a citizens committee that did a lot of studies, and they came up with BioLac as their preferred project. Under this cease and desist order, they also completed their CEQA. They did a mitigated negative declaration, and that was adopted. But they came up against some financing and cost concerns. As I probably mentioned earlier, it's a very small community, and when you start talking about projects in the $8, $10, and $14 million range, you start wondering how you're going to pay for it. So they came up against the financing thing, and they needed more time to figure out how they were going to get the financing done. The board adopted Order 2006-109, and that's the current order that they're under. So they've taken some actions towards compliance. One of the actions that they've taken is to reduce their infiltration and inflow, which is good because they won't have as much to discharge on the other end. They've raised their sewer fees quite a bit to help them figure out how they're going to pay for this new project. And they've collected a lot of data for the variance requests that they're going to need to show that they can still protect beneficial uses, even though they're going to be probably discharging at about 50% of the receiving water flow most of the time, and at some times they might even be discharging more than the receiving water. So under the cease and desist order, though, you know, as they're looking at financing and other things, they've decided to reevaluate and redesign the treatment plant yet one more time. And so the current project is activated sludge and tertiary filtration. They would actually be the first discharger in the Eel River Basin to have tertiary treatment. So the proposed cease and desist order has several tasks, and the first one would be coming in quite short order. On January 15th, they would be submitting to staff a variance request to be discharged at the greater rate for our review. And I've talked quite a bit about that with the consultant that's preparing the work, and I feel confident that they'll be able to submit that on time. They have design plans to submit, and you need to secure funding. I think the city's going to talk to you a little bit about where they're at with their funding, but it seems encouraging at this time. So final compliance under the newly adopted order would be in 2011. We did receive some public comments. The public comment that we received basically was about the need for the board to perform CEQA in order to issue a cease and desist order. And we responded to that comment by saying that this is not a site that's on the Cortese list, which involves hazardous waste. We're not trying to construct anything here. And so we don't feel, our legal staff doesn't feel that CEQA is required for the issuance of a cease and desist order of this kind. We received some late comments in response to our response from the same gentleman, Mr. Ken Berry, saying that he didn't agree with our response, but really we don't feel that he raised any new issues, and so our response to him would be the same.
I'm not clear if you guys have copies of that second letter or not, but I do have a copy.
I don't think so.
I think we received that maybe after the agenda was put together, but we could provide copies if you're interested.
And I have a copy with me here if you wanted me to read that, or if we wanted to make copies and give you an opportunity to see the second letter. As Lisa said, it does pretty much reassert issues that he had raised. It also makes it clear that he's under the assumption that the CEQA exemption we're relying upon would be used for the construction of the facilities by Ferdale, and that's not the case. Would you want a copy of the letter?
I think we have it.
I would suggest for the record, in case the side of this petition, that we make copies and the board gets a chance to look at that letter if we're going to put it into the record.
Okay.
Do you have any questions about the public comment?
There's one for October 28th, yep. And one for October 30th.
There's a second letter from Mr. Berry that's dated November 7th.
We don't have
that. Okay, so we're going to make a copy of it for you so that you can take a look at that, and we can make a decision of whether at that point the chair would like to include that.
Right.
So staff would recommend that we continue working with the City of Ferndale to help them obtain their funding, resolve regulatory hurdles to implementing their preferred alternative, which is constructing the new treatment plant, and obtaining an exception to the discharge rate requirement, and also they would be improving water quality and their effluent quality. So I would ask that you would adopt the revised cease and desist order with the extended time schedule.
So in terms of staff's continue working with the city, the second item, resolve regulatory hurdles, that only an indication that as the order requires they submit something by a date next month, and we'll review that, or?
That's part of it. Some of the other regulatory hurdles that they'll have to overcome are they still have to update their CEQA document to reflect directly the new design of the treatment plant, so they'll have to do an amendment to their existing mitigated negative declaration. We will have to bring a new NPDES permit before the board for adoption for their new treatment plant, and that new NPDES permit will include an exception to the basin plan requirement for the 1% discharge. And as I said, it's a pretty significant exception. But they have been gathering the data that we've asked them to gather in accordance with the basin plan requirements. And it appears that they will be able to show that most of the time, beneficial uses will be protected with this upgraded treatment plant and the higher effluent quality that they'll be discharging into the watershed. You can see from the pictures that I showed you of Francis, which are quite similar to the condition of the Salt River, that the overall watershed has a lot of water quality problems, and not all of them are related to, in fact, few of them are related to discharges from the city. So we need to be looking at that as a watershed-wide. And the Salt River is undergoing a restoration project right now. It's long in coming. They've been working on it for about 10 years, and I believe that the State Board is funding that for several $1 million of restoration money. And so hopefully the conditions will only improve. So what's happening now is that the city is basically doing their piece, their part, to improve what they can for water quality. And as the watershed gets healthier, it's only going to improve conditions for beneficial uses.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa. Will city care to make any statement?
My name is Doug Colbert. I'm the chief waste plant operator for the city of Ferndale. And just to kind of agree with Lisa on some of the points that she made, one of the problems that we're coming up against as a city is that we're doing our best to find a financial, feasible solution, but those solutions have posed significant challenges in that we've spent more than $1 million on studies that we were asked to do to comply and to look for acceptable solutions. And right now, as we sit, the financial cost is pretty much unobtainable for our small community of 600 households without raising rates again. We're in the third year of a three-year plan, and from start to finish, rates have gone from $22 to $66 a month over a three-year period. And so I put this bulleted thing together last week, and just since then, as I was talking to Lisa, we're working with the USDA for a loan and with the State Revolving Fund. And one of the things that we found out just over the last week is that interest rates have dropped considerably since we started the process, and we're looking into this. And the USDA has allowed us to, out of our $8.5 estimated million-dollar project, that we could borrow as little as $3.7 million from them and still receive an additional $1 million grant from them. So we'd get $4.7 million from the USDA and only have to finance $3.7 million. And as well as going together with the State Revolving Fund, an additional $3.3 million from them. And we've pretty much, because of interest rates and restructuring of the loan, we've reduced our loan amount by about $6 million. So one of the things that rates were increased based on a net cost, they say a plant's going to cost $6 million. It wasn't considered that over the life of that loan, it was actually about $13 or $14 million. So this is a considerable plus for us that we've found here. And so what that means to us is that we can continue moving on with this project, and based on our numbers, it doesn't look like we'll have to raise rates at all. We can actually do it and have a surplus. So that is positive, knowing that a week ago we called our engineers in Chicago and basically gave them a stop order and said, we don't want to spend any more money on engineering until we can figure out if we can actually afford this facility without raising rates, because as you know, you have to go before the voters, and it's just been not a good thing politically. I've got my resume all ready to go, just in case we would have to do that. So, but a lot of things to agreeing with Lisa. We have additional unique challenges related to our area, not just like everyone else. Our rivers are silting in, as she mentioned. We're losing volume. We have a close proximity to the ocean, the tsunami zone, seismic zone. Our discharge point is close enough to our facility that right now our lagoon is actually lower than our discharge point. So a sizable flooding event could put river water, creek water, into our facility, which then brings it into the streets and all that kind of stuff. So we have several challenges there. A lot of the solutions that were rejected in the past were rejected by the voters, were rejected based on that net value that we would give them. So when you throw in all the engineering costs, the interest, and everything like that, we're just kind of at a loss as to, you know, we can't go before the people with, you know, without doing extensive work ourselves to find funding. And that's one thing that the regional board has been awesome in helping us out and working with us to help us find funding. And so we're excited about our progress right now. Just over the last few days, it's actually made it look like, you know, we can pull our head above water, no pun intended, and actually look and see that there is light at the end of the tunnel and that we're able to get this. And by working with the regional board and the new facilities that we're doing, we've changed the facility. I've been with the city for 3 years, and we've changed twice since I've been there. And every time we change is not just because we like to make everybody's job more difficult, but we find better ways to save money. And that's our number one priority. So when we change a process, it's not because we like a process better. It's because we feel like we can, by a new process, can reduce our costs considerably, therefore making it easier for us to move forward. So I appreciate the time that you've given us, and I will entertain any questions if you have any.
All right. Thank you, Doug.
Yes.
Jeff?
Yeah, Doug.
Yes.
Make sure this works. I got to talk close enough. One thing I just want to check with you on is looking at the schedule that's proposed. Mm-hmm. Right now you're at 10% design, and by March it seems pretty ambitious to get to 50%. Have you talked to your consultant on that?
Yes. Actually, that 10% is very liberal.
Everybody's yes. got definitions yeah. of 10%, 30%.
We were actually at 10% before we even got into this process. And I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the stop order things that we've done with our engineers is they've actually been moving forward. They're about at 72% right now. And one of the things that we made sure of when they told us they were going to keep moving, because it was actually going to cost them more money to wait and stop, that they assured us that if something happened, they wouldn't charge us for more than where we were supposed to be at the time. So it was something that it was kind of a no-lose situation. If you wanted to take that on yourself, fantastic. We actually got it in writing that they wouldn't charge us any extra fees if something happened and we pulled out or had to do some changes or got held up for whatever reason. So as of last week, we're at about 72%. So we're not going to have any problem meeting our 50% by that March deadline. As well as Lisa was speaking to the environmental, I talked to our consultants yesterday, and they're just waiting on just little data that they're putting together, and they shouldn't have any problem putting that in by the end of this year, which will be well ahead of the January 15th deadline. So we're right on schedule, and we're positive. We're thinking positive, especially the funding was our biggest hurdle. And pretty much everything, the funding was waiting. It was kind of a catch-22. The funding was waiting on the engineering, and different things had to kind of fall into place. It's kind of going to be a snowball effect that once one thing happens, it's all just going to
fall as a flaky
storm. Yeah. So we've been kind of in a waiting game, and now things are starting to move forward.
All right, good. Similar question about that March date, if we could meet it.
Yeah. I've got another question for Lisa, too.
Okay.
Lisa? In the steps that you've outlined, one of the first steps is to request the variance, or to have the variance requested for increased discharge.
Right.
And in Francis Creek, the photos that you're showing, it looks like you've got a major silt problem. It seems like a big management problem for whoever's taking care of that reach of river. How are flows in Francis Creek measured right now? So how are we using that? And I think it's probably the best interest for the discharger as well, that, you know, if we're trying to set a numeric either ratio, or I'm not sure what the variance is going to ask for, either a percentage of flow or, you know, something. But, if, you know, if there's no firm grasp on exactly what the flow is in that creek, then it could be a very, you know, slippery slope and compliance issue for you. So
I can speak to that.
Right now we use a manual flow meter, basically.
So you physically measure it?
Yeah, sure. Physically yeah. measure it, and sometimes it's a velocity meter. Mm-hmm. And so, and we have all the conversions and everything.
Sure. Sure.
But a lot of times we can't even get enough velocity right outside the facility to get a measurement. And so we have to go up the creek farther as we, you know, to get that. So it's been, you know, a lot of it is estimating at right at where our discharge point is. But right now it's done manually, and just because of the silting that she was talking, you can't put a flow meter in.
Yeah, it seems like you can't.
It just,
yeah, you know, your cross section's changing yeah, so much absolutely. That you can't stop the rating. So right. It's almost going to be that's just part of your monitoring.
Exactly, and every day that we do that, we actually take new measurements of the width of the creek and the depth and everything. So it's kind of a standard. We got to a point with our consultants that we could go pretty much, you know, for a week at a time, unless the conditions changed quite a bit. We would know that if we looked in the creek and we had 4 inches of flow depth, that we could estimate within sure. a fair amount of what it is. So we wouldn't have to get down with our waders and measure the width of the creek and everything. Right. So we change that, you know, periodically, but with the rainfall, lack of rainfall, we're not having to do that as much. So we can just pretty much go down there and see how deep it is and say what the flow is.
Great, thanks.
Okay, anything else from staff or board? We do have the lawyers advising us issue.
We need to make, we have the letter of November 17th. I don't know if you guys need to take a moment to take a look at it. And then the chair could decide whether or not to allow this to come in as a late comment. It doesn't really bring up any new issues, and I think it establishes that Mr. Berry has a misunderstanding in terms of what this CEQA exemption is covering, so I don't think that there really is a problem in terms of prejudice to the staff about allowing it in.
Well, with that advice, I would just make one note at the bottom of the first page, the last paragraph. It would be my understanding that there's a misspelling in the EIR. Isn't it an environmental impact report?
Yes. That's his letter, so I don't think we should correct it for him. And Mr. Berry is not here to respond. I would note, too, that this same issue that he's raising here is not new. It's something that the Office of Chief Counsel has been addressing in a number of regions. Mr. Berry raises the same issue quite frequently around the state, using the exemption for facilities that are have been issued cease and desist orders or cleanup and abatement orders. Office of Chief Counsel's opinion is that this does not apply to publicly owned treatment works, and it'll be just a matter of time, I think, before the state board issues a decision on this once it goes up.
Okay, thank you. The chair will rule to allow it in late comment, part of the record. Any other comments on the Ferndale item? Assuming we have need for a resolution?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would make one short comment. Ferndale has been before this board for a whole long time. I think just about my whole career. It needs to get done. We are here to protect the waters of the state of California, and it needs to get done. So I would recommend that if your October 09, I believe it is, to get funding, that in the meantime you also figure out what happens if you don't have that funding. And with that, I would give you a motion to accept the staff recommendation.
Okay. 1 second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right.
I just have one comment, sort of to follow up on Mr. Nancy.
usually when you get your hookup bands, they're absolute. We gave a sliding scale one to Ferndale, which caused some number of problems because it was confusing. Although if we'd had an absolute band, that would have cleared up the confusion problem. But that's a very, I think that was giving full faith and credit to how small the community is and other things. That's not typical or normal, and so it is really important to keep this moving along.
That's our intention.